Well, good morning. Good to be here. You guys alive and well? Last 2 days were gorgeous. Today, maybe not so much, but it's sunny in here, and I'm excited to start this series with y'all. It's on relationships. It's called Ties That Bind, and my original idea got shot down on the graphics. Those are pretty cool, though. Anybody grow up with Squeezer and Trip on the playing cards? I played a lot of cards growing up. Nobody. Squeezer and Trip with the two dogs that were chained, two pit bulls that were at each other's face, like wanting to kill each other, but they're like leaning back, and there's a chain and to each of their dog houses, and on the dog house it says, "There's a tie that binds us to our homes." Anybody ever grow up in like situations where you're like, "Wow, this is family," because it's kind of crazy? Yeah. Yeah, I get it. Maybe you've been in a marriage that's like that. Don't raise your hand if it's currently the marriage you're in. Here's my heart, is that we can recognize that the quality of our life is going to be determined by our relationships. And my heart as a pastor is that you're connected to the relationship that should be primary and first. That is your relationship with God, because he created you. He knows you. He designed you, so he knows the plans that he has for you. I want you to be connected to him, but I want you to have life-giving relational connections with people in your life that help grow you and sharpen you into the person that God's called you to be. You know, Proverbs 27:17 says, as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. What does that mean? That means that you can be sharp, but it's going to require some friction and some sparks, and they come from the relationships that you have. And it's easy when the sparks and the friction start to just peace out. Like, I'm done. Like, this is crazy. But I pray that you can understand, and today we're talking about the power, you can understand the power of covenant relationships, because there are ties that bind us to the purpose and call of God on our life, and the purpose and call of God on our life is always connected to people. I heard somebody say this once, and it just stuck with me, that when you find your people, you'll find your purpose. And I think there's some real truth in that, because were it not for the people in my life, I wouldn't be who I am today. My parents, my mom, my dad, my grandfather, my grandmothers, like they helped define me as a young person growing up. They were truly God-ordained relationships that were healthy. And listen, I get it. Here's why people hesitate in relationships, is because the relationships that they've had are not necessarily so healthy. As I was preparing today's message, and today we're talking about, if you're in church and then you'd know this, is Jonathan and David. And I want to talk today about friendships, because at the end of the day, every relationship is the relational foundation in friendship is the same as it is in marriage. Now, through this series, I'll be talking about marriage. I'll be talking about family, how to deal with adversity in relationships. But the core of every relationship is friendship, like every healthy relationship. It's weird because my dad was very dictatorial and authoritarian growing up. And he loved me, and I knew it, and we had a great relationship. But when I moved into adulthood, there was still that honor and respect given to my father. But something shifted where we went from being like father-son, we're always will be that. But there was this level where it was almost like this foundation of friendship. Anybody know what I'm talking about? And so when we get our friendships right, even in marriage, think about it. Like, I doubt that anybody here, maybe, but I doubt anybody here had an arranged marriage where you never spoke or saw the person until the wedding ceremony, and there it was, like complete surprise. Most people are married because they were first what? Friends. So here's the thing. Like, in preparing for this message specifically with covenant relationships, I realized that all relationships have an element of a transactional aspect to them. But a transactional relationship is like a contract, like a business contract that says, "Hey, you do this, and I'll do this." There's transactions, and covenant relationship has transactions in it, because transactions are like quid pro quos. That's fancy Latin for this means that, or it's like you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And so there's always these transactional aspects in a relationship that is, are y'all following me here?
Yes.
Okay, good. In a transactional relationship, it's always I do this, you do this. I do this, you do this. Well, see, this runs into problems, because inevitably, in any relationship, you're going to do this, and the expectation is they're supposed to do that, but they don't do it. And then what do you do? Because then you're kind of stuck. And this is why so many people have a string of bad relationships is because, like, they do this, but their expectations aren't met. There's disappointment. There's something that happens that they didn't think was going to happen. And so, listen, I've done my part, but you've not done yours. And listen, transactional relationships happen all the time. You go to a restaurant, and the transaction with the server is like, you bring me my food, take care of me, fill up my drinks, I'm going to leave you a tip. Hopefully you tip well. I hope you tip. Do you tip well? I hope you do, because don't say that you're a Christian. And certainly, please, I beg of you, don't say, I go to Church of the King, and you leave like your tip is like one of those dollar, like it looks like a $100 bill, but instead it's a track, but you don't leave any real money. I'm pretty sure you go the one going to hell if you do that. I'm just saying. It's a joke. Like, that's a transactional relationship. I know my server, like, they know me, they have a name tag here, they might not know my name unless they see my credit card. They do their part, I'll do mine. But a covenant relationship is greater than transactional relationships. The reason that so many people have broken relationships is because many of them have just been transactional. It's like, I did my part, they didn't do theirs, and they walk away. But a covenant relationship is not based on one time of like I did this one time, and then they didn't do this, and so like they didn't do their part, and so like I pulled back, and then I just had to, and the whole relationship shattered because I was like disappointed. Let me see if I can express it. I hope I can articulate what's in my mind. It's like transactional relationships are based on each individual transaction, and each transaction has to add up. It's like here, here. Well, when they don't add up, then what do you do? Well, most people at that point pull back and walk away because it's like a lot of little blocks that all have to come together at the right time in the right way. I hope this makes sense. But a covenant relationship is, it's like a circle. It's like a whole. Like, there's those transactions in it, but the relationship is not defined by individual transactions. It's defined by this covenant promise that says, I'm for you always. Yes. Does this make sense at all? It's just what I see in my brain. I can probably articulate it better later in writing. And the scripture that God gave me in this message was out of Acts 20:35. It's where it says, we know that Jesus said, it's better to give than to receive. It's a really interesting statement. It's true. It is better to give than to receive. You've probably given somebody something, and at the end of it, you felt great. You're like, man, that was awesome. That's better than me getting something. In relationships that kind of those transactions like don't add up, even in covenant ones where you've stood before people and made vows to your love and marriage, or those relationships where you knew were like, this is like a God relationship, this is like a friend for life, and you thought it was going to go somewhere and it didn't. You hesitate to give because you gave and they fell short, and you didn't receive anything. Jesus says it's better to give. In a covenant relationship, it's always, first, man, I gotta give. I have to give my heart, my soul. But the reason that, and this is key, I want you to get this. I think the reason that many people have trouble with covenant relationships is because they have trouble giving. And the reason that they have trouble giving is because all they've ever received is garbage. And a lot of people, like, people just done them wrong, for real. Like, just done them wrong. Like to the point where you're like, I'm sorry your daddy did that to you. I'm sorry your mama did this to you. I'm sorry that this happened to you. I'm sorry that these people did these things to you. I truly mean it. Like, I'm so sorry that that happened. I'll stand up here on behalf of everybody who's ever hurt you and go, that's not God's heart, and I'm sorry that happened to you. The enemy's in that because you just received garbage. And here's what God spoke to me about giving and receiving. And Jesus said it's better to give than to receive. But until you've truly received, like, God's goodness, God's love, God's grace, God's redemption, God making all things new, God speaking the truth of who you are, God showing you the future and plan that he has for you. Until you receive that, you'll always have trouble giving in the relationship, any relationship. So today, I pray that maybe you can receive and you can learn what it looks like to receive. We're looking at David, and y'all know the story of David, yes or no? Yes. Everybody know the story of David and what? What's the guy everybody know? David and Goliath. Everybody know about David and Goliath. Most of you, even if you never grew up in church, I'm going to take a sip. Hold on. Everybody know about David and Goliath. David was a kid, and this is a true story. David was about a 14-year-old kid. And his brothers were off at war. The nation of Israel was being attacked by the Philistine army, which is south and west of Jerusalem at this time. Actually, it's kind of around the land of the Philistia was around where the Gaza Strip is, and a little even east of that. And so they're under attack. And so David's older brothers are all in the army, and David is the kid that's staying home watching the sheep. And then one day, his daddy says, hey, listen, tomorrow you're going to have to go and bring your brothers some food, and I want you to bring some food for the commanders as well. So you're going to head out and spend the night with the sheep watching those, because that's what David did. He was a shepherd. He spent the nights in the fields watching the sheep. That was their livelihood. And tomorrow you're going to go and you're going to see your brothers. And y'all know the story. Like, David goes to see his brothers, and he goes down to the battle lines that have been drawn. And it's in the Valley of Elah. You can actually go there today. We know that's exactly where the battle took place. And it's the mountain range, actually kind of larger hills. They're mountains, but not really. They're kind of larger hills on each side. And there's a valley in between with maybe a mile between them. And so the armies were up on the foothills and the hillsides. And the front lines were up closer to each other. And every day, this giant, 9-foot-tall giant, would come out and taunt for this for day after day after day after day. He was taunting Israel, taunting their warriors, taunting their leaders, and taunting their God. And David, this 14-year-old kid, just bringing some food to his brothers, he walks up and he hears what's happening. The same thing that for days and days on end that the army of Israel and the king of Israel who's there and the prince of Israel and all the leaders of Israel, they're hearing this giant taunt them. But something happens inside of David because he hears something differently. And he's like, whoa, that can't happen. Like, God's with us? Like, what are we afraid of? You know the story. David ultimately goes out and he faces the giant, the kid who that morning woke up as a shepherd. He was woke up looking at sheep going, bah. And now he's facing this giant with a sling. Y'all know the story? And he's like, you will not taunt God. I'm going to kill you. This kid like swings the thing and the rock goes and hits the giant, hits Goliath right in the center of the head. He stumbles and he falls down. And then David runs over. Because I just don't believe it was the death blow with the rock. Maybe so. I don't think so. And I'm not so sure that David thought it was a death blow either, because you know what he did next? Y'all gonna love this if you don't know. If you haven't read the story, it's 1 Samuel 17. He takes Goliath's sword out. This huge sword, this kid just knocked down this giant that's been taunting an entire nation's army for like days on end. And he takes the sword and he hacks Goliath's head off. That's cool. I think it's cool. It was like, because think about it, you have all these hardened soldiers that are way older and bigger and stronger and bad looking, scared to death of this giant. And there's this 14-year-old kid that just hacked the guy's head off because he used his little slingshot, caught him in the head, boom, but it knocks the head off. And like, I mean, I'm like, they had to like jaws drop. All these guys are like, who is this kid? What's going on? David's brothers who were making fun of him when he showed up are now like, oh my gosh, what did David just do? And then he grabs the head that he's just chopped off by the hair, picks it up, takes the sword, Goliath's sword, and guess where he goes? He goes to the tent of the king. And David didn't know that morning when he woke up with the sheep that night he'd be spending the night as a hero in the palace with the king. Because everything can change in a moment when you follow God's leading. And something happened, though. He's got that head, he's got the sword, and he walks into the tent of the king. And there's a guy there. It's the prince. His name's Jonathan. And he sees David standing there with a bloody head and a bloody sword that's way too big for David. And something happens inside of him. And we're going to read that. It's 1 Samuel chapter 18, verses 1 through 4. Y'all ready? It says this. After David had finished talking with Saul, he met Jonathan, the king's son. There was an immediate bond between them, for Jonathan loved David. I'm just going to read out of my Bible. It's better than reading out of my notes. There was an immediate bond between them, for Jonathan loved David. And from that day on, Saul kept David with him, and he wouldn't let him return home. So that night, that morning he woke up with the sheep, but that night, baby, he was in the palace. Look at verse 3. And Jonathan made a solemn pact with David because he loved him as he loved himself. Jonathan made a pact with David. Look at verse 4. Jonathan sealed the pact by taking off his robe and giving it to David, together with his tunic, his sword, his bow, and his belt. Jonathan sealed the pact by taking off his robe and by, what's this word? By, come on, say it like you mean it. Jonathan sealed the pact by taking off his robe and giving it to David. This is the foundation of every healthy, God-ordained covenant relationship that we have. Because here's the reality. You don't get to decide how other people in relationship with you act. I tried for a lot of years, and I hurt a lot of people because I was like, no, you need to do it this way. Like, this is my expectation. Now meet it or else. Do you know how selfish? Do you know how messed up that is? Like, that's just jacked up. And then, like, invariably, because, you know, you think you are the person, the people are going to fall short. And the reality is those of you that hold everybody else to this standard up here, and they're just falling short. The reality is that because of your pride, you don't realize that the day is coming when you're going to fall short of everybody else as well. Because we all do. He gave to David. Look what he's sealed the pact. So two things struck me. Number one, Jonathan didn't know David at all. He just saw the kid that faced the giant that his daddy wouldn't. And he said, there's something about that dude. I want to be friends with him. And Jonathan sealed the pact by taking off his robe and giving it. It doesn't say that David reciprocated. We know that ultimately he does. But Jonathan made the first move. David's life, if you read the story of David, David's life was defined by a call from God and the relationships around him. And listen to me, it's the same for us. But what I got out of studying for this and preparing for this is that I want to be a Jonathan, and I need to honor the Jonathans in my life. Are you willing to give? Are you willing to make the first move in relationship? You want covenant relationships that help define your life? You have to be willing to give and be the first one to step up, just like a Jonathan. He sealed the pact by taking off his robe. So we're going to look at the things that he gave, the robe, the tunic, the sword, the bow, and the belt, because each of them are representative of something that we need in our lives. If we want to have God-ordained relationships, like divine covenant relationships, I know what they are in my life. My parents. My pastor's been one that I've known for over 20 years now. I think, 22 years. Pastor Josh Bigwood's one. Pastor Josh Belt from Jennings. Stephen Martin from Harker Heights. These are people that I'm like, they're like family. Some of them are. And then the most important one is my wife. Am I able to recognize the gift that they are to me and give to them? What do I give? Honor, heart, soul. Well, what did Jonathan give? Jonathan started and he gave his robe. Here's the thing. It wasn't just like, oh man, the guy needs a coat. No. He was a prince and everybody identified him because he had like a princely robe. And he says, I'm going to make this pact and I'm sealing it. Here's my robe. And he hands the robe to David. In other words, he's saying, my identity is I don't care about my identity and how people see me in this. I want to value and esteem you. In the God-ordained relationships that I have or want to have, am I willing to give value to other people? To give away my identity and say, listen, it's not about me. Can I just tell you right now, if you want healthy covenant God relationships, you have to recognize that it can't be about you. You want a healthy friendship, it can't be about you. You want a healthy relationship with your spouse, listen to me, it cannot be about you. If you make it about you, you're saying, I want all the good stuff. And it's selfish. And it never becomes a covenant relationship. And unfortunately, many times marriages digress. Like they remember the promise that was made, that circle that was made, that this is the boundaries of our relationship. Like they remember that, but all they focus on are the individual transactions, and it makes for one heck of a marriage that ain't no good because everybody's trying to hold on to their identity and their things of value. Does this make sense at all, guys? Here's the second thing that he gave. He gave his tunic, which was like it was like an undergarment. But because he was a prince and because princes were trained for war, it was more than likely also what men of war of that day continually wore, particularly if you were royalty and somebody might want to do you harm. It was like fine, like chain mail, like mail, so that somebody couldn't come up and like stab you and immediately kill you. And he gave him that tunic. He gave that to him. And what was that signifying to David and to everybody else there? It was saying, hey, I'm going to be vulnerable and I'm not going to defend myself against you. Where are the relationships in your life where you're saying, I'm going to value you. It's not about me. Listen, I'm not going to wear a hardness over me so that like you can't ever like have the opportunity. Like I'm not going to defend myself. You'll have the opportunity to hurt me if you want. This takes trust, but if you want a healthy relationship, you have to be willing to trust. And trust is not like, yes, I trust you, but I'm wearing body armor so that you can never hurt me emotionally. Let me just say, it's impossible to have a soft heart and wear a hard exterior. It just is. Because when you put that hard exterior on, ain't nobody going to get in, ain't nobody going to touch me. It's only a matter of time before your heart becomes as hard as that protective layer that you're wearing that pushes everybody else away. Jonathan gave David his robe. He gave him his tunic. He says, I'm vulnerable. You can hurt me. I'm still making the pact. In fact, this is how I'm making it, by giving you this. The third thing that he gave him was a sword. And by giving him the sword, he's like, I'm taking away my ability to hurt you. Like, I don't want to cut you. I don't want to stab you in the back or the chest or anywhere else. Are you willing to give up your weapons that you use to defend yourself? Your greatest strength is your greatest weakness. You know what my sword was? In my relationships, it was my mouth. Seldom did I walk away from an interaction with somebody in the heat of the moment when things got really sideways and I got fired up, which was pretty easy and sometimes still is for me to get a little fired up. It's my personality. And that gate in your brain that like supposed to like shut on thoughts that you have and things you could say that would be so fitting in the moment to really stick it to them, that gate was broken for a lot of years. And I realize now it was just a defense mechanism. Somebody would do something or say something and I would just come, wah, and like, bam. I didn't walk away from those moments going, man, I wish I should have said, I could have said this. I was like, oh my gosh, did I really just say that? What an idiot. I can't believe I did that. Not realizing, I may have said, you're more important than me. I value you. I'm not going to defend myself. You can hurt me. But when they did, I hadn't given them the sword. And so I'd punch back. Messed up a lot of relationships, people. What do you use? Maybe it's not your tongue. Maybe it's a tone. Maybe it's passive aggressive behavior. I just can't deal with that. That would put me in my place where I've never been passive aggressive. I was just aggressive. And then the sword would come. I had a lot of growing to do. And you know what? Truth is, we all have growing to do, and I still have a lot of growing to do. But I can honestly at this point go, wow, I've seen myself growing in these things. I've grown tremendously, going like, I don't want it to be about me. I don't want to defend myself, and I don't want to hurt you. My daddy was right. Boy, you need to just learn how to shut up. You know what he was saying? Put the sword down, son. Stop hurting the people around you. Why are you doing that? Listen to me. That's a good question. Why do you do that? Better to give than to receive. I had a great childhood, wonderful parents, amazing. But I just had trouble receiving the good stuff that people would say about me. And it helped me. It hurt me. And I couldn't really believe. Because I couldn't believe good stuff about me, it was hard for me to be good towards people even when they were. I hope this makes sense to you guys. What else did he give? He gave his robe, his tunic, his sword. He gave his bow. That was used to fight at a distance, and that was used for provision. What was Jonathan saying? He's saying, I'm going to value you. I'm not going to protect myself against you. I'm going to take away my weapon that could hurt you because I'm for you. I'll always provide for you, and I ain't going to take sideways shots at you either. And then Jonathan gave David, and I think this may be the most important one, his belt. Because your belt kind of holds everything together. First service, I realized when I got to church, I forgot my belt, and I always wear a belt, even though I normally wear shirts untucked. I wear a belt because, like, my pants fall down. Then I got this pack on in the back, and like I didn't have a belt. Belts hold things together, don't they? He gave him that belt. Here's what's interesting in Ephesians chapter 6, the Bible talks about the armor of God and the belt, but they call it this, the belt of truth. And this is the foundation for every healthy covenantal relationship, which is, I will speak truth in love to you. The depth of every relationship that you have, you want to know the depth? You want to, like, the sounding pole for your depth? Okay, I grew up fishing and hunting in the marshes, and you take a little stick. How deep are we? Anybody grew up doing that? Like, how deep we are? What's going on? And you take the little stick. You want to find out how deep your relationships are? How much truth can be spoken in that relationship? Are you willing to give others your identity? You're going to value them more than you. I'm not going to defend myself. I'm not going to hurt you either. I'll always provide for you. I'm always going to speak truth and love to you, and you can speak truth and love to me. This is the foundation for all covenant relationships. So here's what's interesting. Jonathan gave all of this to David. Guess what David gave? Y'all know what he gave? David didn't give nothing. I don't say that, it sounds negative, but he did. Because if your heart in a relationship is about you receiving, you're misunderstanding, like, the foundation of covenant relationship in giving. If you think that a healthy relationship or a healthy marriage is 50-50, you messed up. It's not. It's 100-100. And are you willing to give 100% when the other person's given 5%? It's hard. But it's truth. And this you got to know. All covenant relationships will be tested. Every covenant relationship will be tested. And this happened with David. So here's what happened. David's, are y'all with me? Okay, because I got four more things and then we're done. And they're not going to be as long as these, okay? I know you're like, oh, dear God, we're going to get out of here late. David's standing there, bloody head of Goliath in one hand, sword in the other. Jonathan goes, there is something about that guy. I know that I am joined to him. We're going to be best friends. And before David leaves, he's like, listen, you and I, there's something there. Hey, I'm giving you. And he gave him all of those things. But it wasn't like hunky-dory, because every covenant relationship you have is going to be tested. And so it was all wonderful at first, because David was in the palace. David was in the palace, and it was like wonderful. And like Saul kept giving him responsibility. And everything, the Bible says, actually in chapter 18, I think it's the next verse, it says that, whatever Saul asked David to do, David did it successfully. In other words, David kept on winning and winning and winning. And by the end of it, he's like running the army. And then the minstrels are out singing, David, and Saul has killed his thousands, and David has killed his tens of thousands, which totally wasn't true. Like, David didn't kill 10, he killed a giant, and then he's like good at everything that he does. But like, Saul got jealous and insecure. And so David was in good with the king at first, and the prince, like him and the prince are like best buds, they're best friends. The king's like, David's the man, you win at everything. Until David won it too much, the king got insecure, and then this like crazy demonic shift happened inside of him. And the king Saul is now trying to kill David. And for 8 years, David lives on the run. He has to run for his life because the king's trying to kill him. Do you think he might have questions about his old friend Jonathan that promised all these things when his best friend's daddy is the one trying to kill him and Jonathan is the rightful heir to the throne? Do you think David had legitimate questions? Is Jonathan still for me? Yeah. Let me just remind you, every God-ordained relationship that you have, you will always have questions. Are they for me? Are they with me? But let me just tell you, you need to be the one that answers. When people are asking you that stuff and you know it's a God relationship, you better answer like Jonathan did. So we're going to turn to 1 Samuel 23. 1 Samuel 23. It's been 8 years of David on the run. It's been 8 years of David wondering, does Jonathan want to be king now? Is Jonathan for me? I know he made all those promises. And actually, in those 8 years, he probably saw Jonathan 3 times. And in Acts, I'm not going to read it, but in Acts chapter 20, which would have been years before, he saw Jonathan, and Jonathan reaffirmed. I will read it because it's going to take like 2 seconds. Jonathan, this was years before, Jonathan made a second pact. He made a solemn pact with David saying, may the Lord destroy all your enemies. And Jonathan made David reaffirm his vow of friendship again. For Jonathan loved David as he loved himself. David's got questions. There's a testing. Dude, your daddy's trying to kill me. And I'm supposed to believe that like you don't know anything about that, or like you're not doing anything to help with that? Like, your daddy's trying to kill me. What's your motive? You're going to be the next king if I die. You know that, right? This is legit. Every relationship that is God-ordained will have moments like these. How do you handle them? Hopefully you handle them like Jonathan did. 1 Samuel 23, verse 14. Now David stayed in the strongholds in the wilderness in the hill country of Ziph. Saul hunted him day after day, but God didn't let Saul find him. David stayed in the strongholds of the, what's this word? He stayed in the where? Wilderness. The wilderness. In the hill country of Ziph. He's being hunted day after day after day. Look at verse 15. One day near Horesh, David received the news that Saul was on the way to Ziph to search for him and kill him. Now look at verse 16, because it's key. It's huge. Jonathan went to find David and encouraged him to stay strong in his faith in God. Jonathan went to find David. Here's the 4 things that Jonathan did, and we'll wrap up in the next few minutes, actually. Jonathan did 4 things. Here's the first thing that he did. He went to find David in the wilderness. Am I willing to do that? Am I willing to be a Jonathan? This is it's not about me. I'm going to open my heart to you, open my hands to you. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm going to make sure that you're taken care of. I'm going to always speak truth to you. And when you're in a bad way, when you fall short here, I'm going to go and find you. Jonathan did, this is the first thing. He went to find David in the wilderness. And encouraged him to stay strong in his faith in God. Here's the second thing that Jonathan did. He encouraged David to stay strong in his faith. Do you do that? Hey, listen, man, God's got a call. Like, he put us together for a reason. Like, I'm for you. Like, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to do you wrong. Like, no, my daddy's trying to kill you, but I know that. But just know that I came and found you when you were in a bad way. You know David was exhausted. He's worn out for 8 years. Every day the king's sending people out to kill him, to capture him, to kill him. But Jonathan finds him in the wilderness. And then when he finds him, he's like, God's got a purpose and a plan. The third thing, he calmed David's fears. Don't be afraid. Look at verse 17. Don't be afraid, Jonathan reassured him. He calmed his fears. Don't be afraid. My father will never find you. Can we put verse 17 up? Because the thing is key. Don't be afraid. My father will never find you. Because Jonathan had his back. Do you have people's back when they're down? Do you have people's back when they're wondering who's with them and who's for them? Do you have people's back when they're being hunted? This is how we become the one who establishes a covenant relationship, because we give ourselves to others. And then he says this. This is so huge. You are going to be the king of Israel. This is the prince, the crown prince who's heir to the throne. You're going to be the king of Israel, and I will be next to you, as my father Saul is well aware. Here's the last thing. He reminded David of his call to greatness. I pray that you recognize that every covenant relationship begins by you giving. By you being the one to say, I'm not going to demand that you meet me here. I'm willing to meet you here and bring you here. This makes sense, guys. I want this for you because I want you to have healthy, whole relationships. You need that with God, and you need that with God, with godly people. You need those. Who are those relationships that you have? You're not going to have many of them. My daily is like my wife, like Pastor Josh. And then like my, hey, I need to make a phone call. Like my parents and my pastor. I got four. And that's a lot. But without them, I've got nothing. Because your call to God is always going to be connected to his people. And here's the inherent question. Where are my people at? The better question, am I being that person to somebody else? That's what Jonathan did, and it made David who he was. Let's bow our heads. Maybe you're hearing you say, Pastor, this message is for me. And here's what I honestly just feel like. Some of you just need to receive. God's called you to give in relationships, but you need to receive first his love. You need to receive the truth of how he sees you and who he calls you to be. That he didn't create you to walk in misery and pain. He created you to walk in his purpose and his calling. And in that is fulfillment. It doesn't mean that misery and pain is gone. It means that in the middle of it, you know where you're supposed to be is right where you're supposed to be, because God's leading your steps and he's put people in your path to walk with you through it. Maybe you're here, you need to receive. Verse 18, and we're not going to put it up. Just keep praying. Keep an attitude of prayer. So the two of them renewed their solemn pact before the Lord. What started with Jonathan ended with both of them. Father, I just pray that people here that feel like they've been walking alone, that you let them see that you've got others in their path that you're going to join to them. Father, I just pray that there's just a renewal of your spirit in their heart and in their life, that they know that you love them. Father, I just pray over everyone here that feels like there's a relational lack. Nobody's looking around. I'm not going to embarrass you. If you're here and you feel like there's a relational lack in your life, I want you to raise your hand. I just want to pray for you right where you are. Just raise your hand. You feel like there's a, raise them high. There's a relational lack. Father, I just pray for those with their hands raised. Lord, I just pray that you use them to be what you've called them to be and what they're currently lacking. And Father, I just pray that you provide for them, that you put people in their path that they know that they're called to be a Jonathan to, and in the end, they're a David. You can put your hands down. And maybe you're here, you need to receive God's love. Maybe you're far from God, and you feel like you can't really connect with him, but you want to, and you want to be in a relationship with him. Can I just say that he's already given to you? John 3:16 says, "For God so loved the world, for God so loved you, that he gave more than just himself. He gave his son, who is fully him, it's God. But he demonstrated his love by saying it's more than just me, because I might take a bullet for you, but I'd never let my kid take a bullet for you. But God loved you so much, his demonstration, Romans 5:8 says, but God demonstrated his love towards you, towards me, towards us. And while we were sinners at our worst, Jesus died for us. The creator of the universe hung on that cross and died for you. He laid down his life so that you could live. Maybe you're here and the light bulb's going off and you know you need to reciprocate. God already, he made the first, he's the Jonathan in this story. He gave and he's waiting for you to reciprocate. Maybe you're here and you know you're far from God, but God's calling you to renew that pact, or maybe it's for the first time to make that pact with him. If you're here and you say, Pastor, I know Jesus loves me. He died on the cross for me. And I choose to enter a relationship with him. Nobody's looking around. If you're here, you say, Pastor, that's me. Just raise your hand and say, Pastor, that's me. I want to pray for you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you back there to see you. Let's all pray. Can we just pray together? If you raise your hand, you pray out loud. Just pray. Dear Jesus, I give you my life. I receive your forgiveness. Jesus, I know you died for me. I know you chose me, and I choose you. In Jesus' name, amen. Come on, can we celebrate that? That's awesome.